Session number 20943, Reel 3.
Ivor Nutting, Reel 3. Where did you go to after in Feederville?
Well, we went on up to... finished up at Cape Bon. Where Von Arnim took over because Rommel went back to Germany, didn't he? And we went in the peninsula there, which is Cape Bon. And on, I think it was May the 13th, the Germans slung it in, and we was there on the spot when it all happened, and everybody went crazy. I pinched a motorbike, and I was quite happy with that. They had lots of food there, far more than we had, so we all helped ourselves. And I think it was about a fortnight after that came the first victory march of the war in Tunis.
So you got a German motorbike? And
Yeah, I had a German motorbike for a few days. Because I used to like motorbikes. But anyway, what happened was we stayed there. They sent the main body back of my regiment, the DIV rather, and left Gurkhas, Sikhs and Punjabs, and some of the Royal Sussex Regiment, the Essex Regiment, and part of the Scots Regiment. Because that used to be divided, so it used to be one Gurkha, Sikh and Punjab, and a British regiment. That was in three times. It was, and then there would be a Scots Regiment, Sikh and Punjab, and Gurkha, and then I think the Essex Regiment, the Scottish Regiment was the same again. Sikh, Punjab, Gurkha, and British Essex, I think it was. Anyway, that was that. They selected a few of us to do the victory march in Tunis, and we then had to go back about, I think it was about 2,000 miles right back to Alexandra down that road. And there they give us a fortnight leave, and one and the other. And I took a IM's course, instrument mechanics, you know, for signalling. And then afterwards we went to Jerusalem. And there he was training us with mules, pannier bags and all the rest on the mules. They've got some small hills there in Jerusalem. We was there for a while, and then we went on to Syria. There again to train for the bigger hills and so on. The Lebanon rather, not Syria, Lebanon. And then after that, on a boat, went back to Alex, got on a boat, and over to Taranto.
Are you still with the same unit?
Yeah, all the time. And then from Taranto, we went up to a place, after we'd arrived there and sorted ourselves out, went to a place called Lanciano. And there, we were there for quite a while. We did one or two local attacks, and then came the casino set up.
What did these local attacks consist of?
Oh, yes, only small ones. No, they used to shift us from one side to another because they entertained us with the Americans. And what happened was, we went up to casino in February on a Max, these big Max white American troop transformers. Oh, the porters, it was horrible. just before we got there. I was in one that tipped over. But anyway, we went in to the bottom of a casino. Not Casino Mountain itself, but just beside it. The Americans were there. And as soon as we got in there, the Germans put in a counter-attack. And we stayed that off. And I was in a trench, a small trench, with a Texan or something he was. He kept saying, gee, I love that girl, I'm going back home. And I thought, what the hell? Because you was up there in water to start with. Anyway, that...
You were in water?
Water, yeah, water. Right up to your knees.
In trenches?
Yeah, it was only a small one. It was better than that and getting your head knocked off. But anyway...
How did you come to be near an American?
Well, because we was relieving them. We went in there to relieve them. So that was that. And then... we was there for a couple of days, and then I think you'll find it was February the 15th or thereabouts, Freiburg lifted the, what's the name, on Casino, the bombing, the shelling and bombing of Casino itself, Monte Casino. So, a very clear morning, I think it's February the 15th, absolutely clear and overcome these bombers. Of course, we went up there. Now, the German knew they were coming, the monks knew they were coming, everybody knew they were coming. But they sent us up there, and that's on record. I've got it in books here, I'll tell you. They sent us up there, and I knew we'd ever seen the film of the bomb in a casino. We was right on the side of it. Terrible. A big cock up, which frequently happened, as we know. And
in what way was it a cock up?
Well, we weren't supposed to be up there. They were bombing Casino itself. We weren't supposed to be any of us around there. And Denny, our CO, said everybody knew it was happening except us. Anyway, what happened was, it was a terrible place, and we was in a little wadi, like a sort of a quarry place, a big... We went up there, there was dead bodies everywhere, mules. We went out there, I don't know how many mules we went up there with, but it was somewhere around about 60 or something like that. We only finished up with about 4, with signal kit, all the kit needed. And... there were all sorts. We was in a little sort of a gully thing, and we stayed there, and there was dead bodies, there was all sorts of bodies, Germans, all sorts, and they was there all the time, and we was there for 6 weeks, 42 days we were there, and you could only move at night. We used to be strapped 2 or 3 times a day. And I was so poor, and many of the people, they didn't have enough blankets to go around. I fortunately not had a blanket, and he was laid down in one of these, built a few stones up a bit, had a new load in it. And on one occasion, I picked out bullets out of this blanket, so that showed how close I was near to it. There again, extremely lucky. And we used to do attacks, but the Gurkhas managed to get over to a place called the Abbey, which was 2 miles further on, where they got trapped, and they had a hell of a job to get back. And the German, you could hear them shouting. There was only 16 and 18 year olds, a lot of them. You could see them and shout to you. And the Germans used to drop leaflets telling the Indians to give up. They was wasting their time, you know, and all the rest of it. You had all that. And the casino was terrible. And many of the people, my unit, I mean, a lot of them got killed, but many of them, when it comes to get out, after 6 weeks, they couldn't walk properly. And I've got a picture of one there. When we came out, he was at his guts hanging out, but he, fortunately he survived. But
it was a wound.
We went down several times from casino to get a generator, and coming back up, and they used to wait for you. You know, you used to get all that business. Anyway, we come down and got out of that. And
when the Gurkhas were shouting to you, what were they saying?
The Gurkhas were shouting. Not the Gurkhas.
Who was shouting?
The Germans. The Germans were shouting to tell them to give up, you know. And the thing about it, they say there was nobody in the monastery, but most of us have got our doubts. But anyway, that's all history. And anyway, we got down out of that, terrible, and there was bayonet. They said there was no bayonet charges in the war, there was. And there was one, I can't remember the place, just by us anyway. They went in with the bayonet at the casino. It was horrible, and it was over a place, Monte Cassino, that was towering above you. They could observe everything, you see. And it was, we used to have our food brought up at night, and sometimes we didn't get any.
Who went in with a bayonet?
Some of our lot.
Did you know the unit?
Well, it was a part of the Sussex. And another time was that place I was telling you before, Alhama. That was a bayonet job. So those people who were saying this, who write things like I got down there, they don't know what the hell they were talking about. It's someone that's sitting back and assuming things. Anyway.
Who went in with a bayonet at Alhama?
I didn't, because I had one of those Tommy gun things. But the Sikhs and Punjabs did. So, that is fact. Anyway, so, you know, we came out, we had 4,000 casualties there, the 4th Indian Division. Then we came back and regrouped. And what happened to me after casino?
What condition were you in by the end of casino?
Well, not too bad as compared to other people. I mean, it was completely messed up, you know. But anyway, we was all right. We went back, and then I can't quite. What was the next stage?
Did you go into Rome after this?
Oh yeah, we went through Rome. But I'm just trying to think, I can't remember what happened to me afterwards. We did several attacks, and I remember one attack, we went in, and we laid a line. Well, not, on one occasion I was laying a line in Italy with another bloke, and we were joining up, the drum had rung out, and I was joining up the drum. And I looked down, like where your bag is, and I saw a big pair of feet. I looked up, and there was a German. And my pal and I, he beat us to it. He stuck up his hands. And that was that. He'd had enough. And first thing we do, give him a fag. Anyway, what happened, we plodded on. But on another occasion, we laid a line and went down over this big hill, laid this line, it was a little village. And we was having a look around, see if we could find any vino, you know, wine. Went in these some of these barns, and one thing or the other, and couldn't find anything. Then we, at the end of the line, we stopped and had a discussion and a fag. And come back. And no sooner we gone back, they said, right, we're going in, and we went. And that same spot where we stopped and had a fag, five of our blokes were dead.
From what?
Because the people, the Germans, was in that building, and they didn't attack us. They left us because they knew what was coming. So we were very fortunate. They could have killed us easy. And so we often wonder why, you know, I do. Very, very lucky in that respect. See what happened next. Oh, we went.
I think you wanted to say something about being at Urbino.
Yeah. Well, this was a place where the partisans was with us, and a group of us, was about 10 of us, I think, and some partisan. And Urbino is on a hill. It's quite a big place. And as you know, most places in Italy, they're on a hill and they have a wall around them. We went through a culvert to release the gates to let the rest in. Early one morning, and when we got in there, the Germans were ready to go anyway. So what happened, a skirmish went on, and the Germans got out, and we went into a big square. It was like a big school playground. And what happened was, the Italians went into houses and dragged women out by their hair, cut their hair off, dragged men out, and they lined them against the wall and shot them. And they shot a lot of women and all, because they'd been fraternizing with the Germans. And that was, I thought it was a frightening thing it was. I couldn't believe it. Anyway, that's what happened.
Did the English soldiers intervene?
No, they just left them.
How many men did they shoot?
Oh, I would say it was at least 18 men and women. Some of the women they didn't shoot, they just cut their hair off and beat them up. Because the Italians are funny people, they get very aggressive. A lot of people think they were cowards, but they weren't. Because when the Italians gave up, we had with us an Italian parachute regiment with us, and they were monsters. Very frightening people. They was on our side then, so there it was.
In what way were they monsters?
Big, massive men. Big, massive, aggressive men they were. And this was a place where we were when the Poles come to assist us, and the Poles came in and they started shelling us. They had their guns pointing the wrong way. They were pretty good soldiers. These were the parachuters, big aggressive men.
Can you tell me about the laying of landlines, repairing of landlines that you did at Cassino, please?
Oh, yeah. Well, the landlines, you run them out. And there was like a big watch spring, really. It was called assault lines. But they was useless. Why they had them, I don't know. Because the communications weren't all that long. You couldn't use a radio a lot. But as soon as a shrapnel hit it, they sprung back. So more or less you had to relay the line again. Wasn't very successful. And what happened at night, as soon as dusk fell, everything was active. It was not far from my little, well, same with a Welsh bloke and myself, He was a German lying there. He'd been dead for ages. And you've got to remember, 6 weeks, the stench. There was all sorts of people there. And you couldn't do anything in the daytime. And the planes used to come over over in the daytime, going back to the casino. They used to bomb the monastery and so on. But on one occasion, it was 27 big American bombers come over. Up the Po Valley, they circled casino, went back and blew their own artillery and all the rest of it up. This is true, the American bombers. It was a target that you couldn't miss. But you've heard all about the Americans anyway. But this was unbelievable. But you often think how you survive with all the stench of bodies. You couldn't bury them. And there was even the Moroccans. Before we went up to casino, when I told you we went up and relieved the Americans on the base of casino, Moroccans come up and they brought their wives with them. This is unbelievable, but it's true. And when they gave them mortars, oh Christ, it was, you know, you didn't know what the hell was going to happen. Anyway, they was here, and that was that.
What do you mean you didn't know what was going to happen when they gave them mortars?
Well, they didn't know where the hell to fire them. Of course, at casino again, you had these never-wersers. You heard them going, whoom, 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 whoom. You say, here comes our iron rations. And that was it. But terrible. And a thing reflecting back to your own... we went out there as conscripts. And the regular soldiers, you know, they thought, well, is this, that and the other. And I had one bloke, a big Irish man, when we went into an attack one day, and the 88s were coming, I dug a little trench. He pulled me out of it. And he was a boxer, and, you know.
What do you mean he pulled you out of it?
Because the 88s were firing. He wanted to save his life and bugger me. Pulled me out of it and got in there. Big Irish man he was. I don't know what happened to him in the end.
And he was a regular?
He was a regular. And another bloke, I told you about a bloke being shot at in Eritrea.
Can you repeat that? Because
he was shot in Eritrea and the smoke came over and he shouted out gas and run. So they shot him. And his name was Fleet. And we had a... Sorry. And his name was Fleet. And what happened was, after that, we had a sergeant in my platoon who was a big boxer, nothing up here. And he used to, you know, the bullying type. And they said to him then, unless you mend your ways, you're next. Because we had nothing to lose. You've got to remember this. We had nothing to lose.
Did he mend his ways?
He did. But eventually an anti-tank shell took his shoulder away and that was the end of him.
You were also telling me earlier off the record about someone who inflicted a wound on his foot.
Yes.
Can you repeat that, please?
Yes. He was a very nice bloke, very timid. He'd lost all his family in the London raids. And obviously, he had not much to live for. He wasn't fighting for his family or anything like that. But he also had... he couldn't stick it. And in other words, his nerves went. And so what he did, he had a bully beef tin, he put it on his ankle and put a rifle on the top of it, and he fired and messed it, you know, blew his ankle apart. Now, the reason for the bully beef tin was to destroy any burn marks, so that it could have been fired by an enemy or anything. Anyway, eventually what happened, they found out that it was a self-inflicted wound. So when we got back into the, back in the desert, back in Egypt and all the rest of it, he was convicted of self-inflicted wounds, and they was put him in their sort of glass house, a place called Daba. And there he died.
Why did he die?
He died because he couldn't stick it. He couldn't take it anymore.
His health
rung out. But, you know, he couldn't. It killed him.
What were they getting him to do?
Oh, God. Unbelievable things. You never believe what they do. He was running about with a big pack on his back full of sand in the intense heat. They deprived him of food and various other things. They did all sorts of things. Unbelievable.
And you also told him, and that was in Eritrea that he shot himself in the foot?
Yeah.
I think there was another chap in Eritrea who wanted you to desert with him?
Yeah, well, he came back with me to Port Sudan because he had some illness or other, and he was saying, come with me, let's get out of it. But I was brought up with my grandmother and my grandfather. They reflecting back, I was brought up with them, and they lived in, worked for a these toffs, you know, in Tunbridge Wells and places like this. And they thought they were treated like slaves. I encountered this. Stand up when I'm talking to you. Bow your cap. This is in the Tunbridge Wells area. There's no industry there. It's bankers and all those sort of people. And I used to get really going. Anyway, what happened to me was when I went in and found out can I go back? I don't know if you're interested in this. These people employed my grandparents like that, they suddenly went broke. It was a bloke called Tidebrook, his name was Elliot Alves. He had a massive farm where my uncles used to work and all the rest of it. And I used to go down to the dairy and all this business. And suddenly he went broke. So what happened? He was in a tide house, and the next thing you knew, they were completely ruthless. You didn't have any this business we got now. He was out on the street. And my grandparents and I lived in a pantechnicon, which is a furniture van, in a field for a few months. Quite a few months. You live like these people now, like the gypsies. Well, we weren't gypsies, but we had to have a fire outside and sleep like that. And eventually, my grandfather got a job. He was a marvellous gardener. And my grandmother worked. She had four children. And what happened was we eventually got this place, which is a place called Pennybridge. There, and there it is over there. Janet painted that one. It was a 1611 house, and we lived there, and that's where Owena grew up, you know, as I mentioned before, and all that.